there. Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We are always online at npr.org. And, you know, we could talk about things that are moderately interesting, slightly amusing, halfway curious. But what's the fun in doing that? How about instead we talk about the most emailed, most viewed, most fascinating stuff on the internet? Let's do the most. I'm going to start because I'm the boss today.
The one and only.
Yeah. I have one of the most emailed at CNN.com. This is Matt Martinez's worst nightmare. A Boeing 747 split in two on takeoff.
Can I point out how often we have something that we call
Matt Martinez's worst nightmare? It's a
the
long list.
The man has
list.
A lot of nightmares.
There are a lot of them. This is scary. I mean, luckily this was a cargo plane, so no one was hurt. A large cargo plane crashed at the end of a runway, and it literally split in two while it was trying to take off. Sunday, this happened at the Brussels airport. Four of the five crew members on board were slightly injured, but nothing totally serious. And the plane, however, was very, very seriously damaged. And, you know, this is, as Matt pointed out this morning, this is executive at Boeing's, this is the worst nightmare when you're sitting around in a board meeting and you say, well, at least the plane didn't split in two. It did. Jeannie, what do you have?
Oh, we've got a very serious hops shortage, international hops shortage. It's going to be especially dire for those microbreweries.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of an interesting history here. Apparently, there was a glut in hops, the little flowers that make aroma and, you know, taste and all that yummy range of flavor in your beers. And the glut had caused people to put less hops into production. They could make this extract, which was really easy to store and substitute for hops.
Mm-hmm.
And all the big, big breweries have like these long-term contracts, so that's why their prices are probably more stable. And these hops extracts are in private hands, so nobody knew how much there was. They just knew there was plenty of it, so much of it that you couldn't get a good price for hops. All of a sudden, major weather problems in Australia and Eastern Europe, total decline in hops production, and the extract runs out, leaving microbreweries.
Supply and demand,
high
folks.
High and dry.
Supply and demand. That was the most emailed on Yahoo, right?
Most emailed on Yahoo, thanks.
Cool. Lauren Spohr.
I've got one of the most emailed from the Baltimore Sun, and it's about something called DWT, that's driving while texting. And apparently Maryland is tied with Louisiana for having the fourth highest percentages of people who do drive while texting.
Oh my gosh.
Although, looking at the whole country, apparently more than half of drivers under 29 text while driving, and it's legal.
That is crazy.
I know.
You can't even.
It seems worse than talking.
I guess you. It is.
It's much worse, yeah. Yeah.
Don't you need two hands to text?
I don't know.
I'm not a one-handed texter.
No, yeah. I do it with one hand.
You do it with one
hand. But still.
Not while driving,
yeah.
Never.
No, I don't drive. I do it on the subway, which is non-dangerous.
Not driving.
Yeah.
You're not driving the train?
No.
Ian, what you got?
I have a most popular from Newser, you know, news aggregator.
Love Newser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a follow-up on one of my favorite stories in the world. You remember we talked about a couple months ago these three disembodied right feet. Two of them were size 12. They didn't know the size of the third. Wearing running shoes, just the feet had washed up on shore around British Columbia.
It's very disturbing.
Another one just showed up.
Not
so
funny.
They don't. There's no indication foul play is involved. Although I'm like, what?
Yeah. How does that just happen?
They have no information to suggest that the foot was forcibly removed. There are, and in all cases, there are no tool marks. There's this thing, you know, people that study waves say that a right shoe and a left shoe, being a different shape, would drift differently in the ocean. So it may be that somewhere on some island there are a bunch of left feet. Another thing that I thought was interesting about this is one reason that you're getting feet and not other parts is that they believe the shoe is actually protecting the foot from the salt water.
So the rest of the body decomposes.
Probably, yes. It would be more likely to decompose. And there's this process, I believe it's called adipocere, by which salt water turns fat into this soapy substance.
Ew.
So it's kind of, the foot is held together in the shoe, and then the salt water turns the fat, I guess it's like kind of gelatinous, and holds it all together.
That's so gross. Although, I watched Titanic last night, and I gotta say, I was thinking about all those decomposing bodies in the ocean.
Yeah.
All those feet. That's an uplifting story. Matt!
I have one of the most viewed and emailed at NPR.org right now. It's a story from NPR's In Character series. You know, the series that explores the origins of some of the most famous American characters. And Guy Raz did this report. NPR Pentagon correspondent Guy Raz, and it hardly needs any more introduction than I've just given it. Let's just let Guy explain.
So one afternoon, the dude's taking a bath, and he's having a smoke. And a group of German nihilists in spandex break into his apartment. And they start trashing the place with a cricket bat. Now, anyone else in this circumstance might start to panic. But the dude? Well, the dude stays pretty calm. He looks at the nihilists and he says,
Hey, this is a private residence, man. La, 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 la,
la, la, la. That's Jeff Bridges playing Jeffrey the Dude Lebowski in the Coen Brothers film The Big Lebowski. Perhaps the least formal man in American cinematic history. An icon to millions of slackers. And so today, we profile the dude, part of NPR's In Character series, exploring fictional American characters. Man in me will do
nearly any task. I am Jeff Bridges, and I played the dude in The Big Lebowski. So the dude, I guess, you know, his parents named him Jeff. He's, you know, from the family Lebowski, so it's Jeff Lebowski is his name, his real name. But he calls himself the dude. That's what he's known as.
We first meet the dude at midnight. He's walking down the aisle of a Ralph's supermarket in a robe and jelly sandals. The dude's in his mid to late 40s. This evening, he's run out of half and half. That's one of his quirks. The dude consumes a lot of half and half. It's a key ingredient in his drink.
What's your drink, dude?
White Russian, thanks.
White Russian.
And there's another important thing to know about the dude.
Jesus, man, could you change the channel? I had a rough night, and I hate the Eagles, man.
But he loves Creedence. The dude's got a long, thick goatee. His gray streaked blonde hair falls down to his shoulders. He lives alone. It's a one-bedroom apartment in Venice, California. And when we meet the dude, his favorite rug's just been destroyed by an intruder.
Yeah, man, it really tied the room together.
Now, back in the late 60s, early 70s, the dude was part of the Seattle Seven, a group of anti-Vietnam War activists. He never got married. And Jeffrey the Dude Lebowski burns it a lot.
What do you do for the recreation?
Oh, the usual. Bowl, drive around, the occasional acid flashback.
Let's face it, the dude, he's lazy, a deadbeat, a loser, a 60s burnout. And yet a character who's been cited, and I'm not making this up, in literally hundreds of doctoral dissertations and academic papers over the last decade. He's a fictional hero who's inspired a lifestyle. And every few months, somewhere in America, fans gather at Star Trek-like Big Lebowski conventions. There's even a dude-inspired religion, Dudeism. It preaches non-preachiness. The fifth book of its Bible is called Deuteronomy. Now, behind the haze of pot smoke and underneath the bathrobe, the dude, well, he's one multi-layered guy. I asked Jeff Bridges for his take.
You know, I was thinking about kind of preparing for this interview. I didn't do that in honor of the dude, sort of. I don't think the dude would have prepared.
The dude wouldn't have prepared. And that about sums up the core of what the dude is about. Not to get too academic here, but the dude was written with a purpose. He's the personification of casualness, a kind of celebration of American informality. And when the Coen brothers conceived the idea, they found their muse in a man who's actually called the dude in real life.
Dude here. This is Jeff Dowd.
Jeff Dowd lives in L.A. Ever since he was a kid, everyone called him the dude.
It just kind of came off the name Dowd. And actually, if you Google Dowd, it'll go all the way back that the original Dowds, the Dudas, were Irish kings and in the 10th century, and they were called the Dudas.
Anyway, in the movie, the dude becomes a victim of mistaken identity. There's actually another Jeffrey Lebowski in town. He's the Big Lebowski. And the Big Lebowski's a foil. He's the polar opposite of the dude. For starters, the Big Lebowski's filthy rich. He's uptight and conservative and formal. And so one afternoon, the dude goes to meet the Big Lebowski.
Are you employed, Mr. Lebowski?
Wait, let me explain something to you. I am not Mr. Lebowski. You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude.
So that's what you call me, you know? That or his dudeness or duder or, you know, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Are you employed, sir?
Employed?
Well, he's a character who's, in many ways, is an intellectual drifter.
Again, the real-life dude, Jeff Dowd.
Who's a person who doesn't, you know, really care what people think about him. I mean, obviously, if you, you know, you're... It's the middle of the night, and you're in Ralph's in your robe and jellies. You know, you really don't care that much. You know, he's a character that sees the truth.
And that's the thing about the dude. His purity and authenticity mask his many, many flaws. Joel Cohen, who wrote the character, wasn't available for an interview, but he did talk about the dude in a 1998 documentary.
It just seemed interesting to us to thrust that character into the most confusing situation possible, the person, it would seem, on the face of it, least equipped to deal with it. That's sort of the conceit of the movie.
But somehow, the dude is exactly the right person to deal with it. The dude can cope with the challenges because he doesn't change the way he interacts with people based on their class or title or gender. Everyone's on the same equal playing field. There's no pretense. Everyone's just a dude.
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man. New shit has come to light. And man, she kidnapped herself. Hasn't that ever occurred to you, man? Sir?
The dude was written for Jeff Bridges. And even though he's played presidents and athletes and villains, of all those characters, the dude's his favorite.
I think there's a little dude in all of us, you know, and that's probably why I like him, because I see a bit of myself in the guy, you know.
So the next time you start to feel anxious or aggressive or uptight or judgmental, just remember the dude. And remember, there's a little bit of him in all of us.
Take it easy, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I know that you will.
Yeah, well, the dude abides.
For more, go to npr.org/incharacter.
The dude abides. I don't know about you, but I take comfort in that. It's good knowing he's out there, the dude, taking her easy for all us sinners.
NPR's Guy Raz reporting on The Dude. You can find a link to all the stories you heard on The Most today and, of course, a White Russian recipe at our website, npr.org/Brian Park.